Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Visit wholefoodsmarket.com or download the Whole Foods Market app to learn more and find the store nearest to you.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Well, hello. Welcome to All in the Industry on Full Service Radio. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and we are coming to you live from the Line Hotel in the Adams Morgan neighborhood in Washington, D.C. Yes, this is a special gig for me. I'm out here in D.C. I was invited by my former engineer who was talking with before the show. I think he did about 100 of my episodes, Jack Inslee. Jack is the founder of Full Service Radio, and he's also from Heritage Radio Network, former executive producer. So I'm super excited to be here. The studio is beautiful, and so here we go. This is the 173rd episode. Today is Friday, April 6th, and my show is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry, as usual. Today, my guest is an exceptional chef and restaurateur who has several restaurant concepts in D.C., including two right here at the Line Hotel. I will introduce him fully in a moment. First, as I do on every show, I will start out with my PR tip. Later, we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to stay connected. Make the effort to keep in touch with those who are important to you, including your friends, family, and colleagues. When we get busy, it's easy for us to get all wrapped up in the everyday stuff and forget everything else. But it's important to take time to maintain relationships that are meaningful. So the next time you think of someone who you miss, just pick up the phone or send them a text or email. It's easy, and it will not only make someone's day, but it will ensure that you don't lose a valuable relationship. Connecting and reconnecting are definitely worth the effort. That's my tip today. Now, I'm thrilled to be in D.C. and with my guest who's based here in D.C. It is Eric Bruner Yang. He is the chef and owner of Makato, Paper Horse, Honeycomb, Brothers and Sisters, and Spoken English, the latter two are restaurants here at the New Line Hotel in D.C. Eric is a 2-times James Beard Foundation Award nominee. He's also the founder of Toki Underground, and he and his restaurants have received numerous accolades from Bon Appetit to the New York Times and the Washington Post, and many more. Eric is also the host of Foreign National on Full Service Radio with his wife, Seda Nak. And I could go on and on and on, but that's a long enough intro.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Hi.
How's it going? Good morning.
Good morning. I know. I usually do my show at 4 o'clock, so I'm like, I gotta, get the energy. I got the energy going early.
Yeah, it's popping. You have a great radio voice.
Thank you. I think you do too, because I was listening to some of your shows, and we balance each other.
Thank you. It gets weirdly deep, and then as the show goes on, it goes weirdly not deep.
We'll see if I go deep. So, let's talk about your background a little bit, how you got into cooking and becoming a chef and restaurateur. Did you set out to work in restaurants?
Not really, but I've always had this independent spirit, I guess is the best way to put it. My mom would say rebellious, right? But I started working when I was 15, as soon as I could legally get a job. And at the time, we were living in Woodbridge, Virginia, which is like 45 minutes south of D.C., and my first job was making caramel popcorn at the mall, for that chain, Mrs. Tindall's.
Okay.
And I loved that job. It was like the first kiosk in the main food court entrance. So I thought it was really cool. I had like spiky hair. You'd give out free samples all the time. But we would actually really make kettle corn and cheese popcorn and everything in this beautiful copper kettle, and the caramel corn, of course. And so I did that for about a year. And then in my formative high school years, I worked for Red Robin for a long time, like 3.5 years. But I just worked in restaurants, A, because of it was really good money. And I had a real passion for playing music. So it was the perfect job, as most people know, for people that are in the music industry or up and coming in the music industry. A lot of people end up working in restaurants. So that's basically how it all got started. And I just, I mean, at this point, I'm almost 20 years in the restaurant industry, which is kind of crazy since I've just been working for so long.
Yeah. I started as soon as I could drive. When I was 16, I got a job at a little Mexican restaurant in Miami as a hostess. I just wanted to work. Yep. So I had the bug.
Yeah, I loved the working of it, the social aspect of it. And I mean, I've done everything from making popcorn to washing dishes, waiting tables, bartending.
So did cooking. You go to cooking school?
No, I did not. And I didn't really take cooking seriously till about 2000 and I guess 7 or 8.
What happened then?
I moved to DC in 2007 and I was hired as the general manager for up and coming kind of sushi chain here called Sticky Rice.
Okay.
And they had one in Richmond. They were opening their second location here in DC. And I had advocated for this GM job, even though I was completely unqualified. I had just finished business school, and my music career was kind of coming down to an end. But I knew I was capable. I just never had the opportunity. So I really pitched for it, and I got the job. But we were so super short-staffed that first year. All I ended up doing was cooking on the line every week, every day of the week, because I was just capable of doing it. So working sushi bar, working the wok stations, and all of that. So by the end of that year, I transferred from the GM to the kitchen manager of that location, and that's when I really kind of started thinking that I could be a chef, I guess is the best way to put it.
Okay, yeah. Well, then how did I don't know with a timeline, like when did Toki Underground come about and how did that come about?
I started working on Toki Underground maybe 2009. Yeah, 2008, 2009. I had done 2 years of Sticky Rice, or I was with that company for 2 years, and then my grandfather passed away. I'm from Taiwan. So I went back to Taiwan over a period of 2 years from when he was sick to when he passed away to get as much visits in as I could. And when at one of the visits, I happened to... I was just there for such an extended period of time, and I was just so used to working, I just didn't know what to do with myself. So my uncle got me a stage at a ramen shop in Taipei, and I worked at this ramen shop. And I think I was like, I don't know, 22 or 23 or 24 at the time, something like that.
Young.
And I was young. And I was really starting to really kind of figure out or discover my own cultural identity, you know, being half Asian for a long time is just like something you don't think about or you do think about. But really, like in my early 20s, I started to really think about it. And then I did this stage at this ramen shop. And Taipei has this very crazy culture, amazing culture, Taipei itself, because of its heavy colonized influence from the Japanese. And so I came back to the U.S. from those trips, and I was really kind of like, I finally had this idea of Toki Underground. The logo is the shape of the Taipei city flag. So it was all this real inspiration of that period of my life where I was figuring myself out and I wanted to express my cultural identity in my own way through a restaurant. And so that's how Toki came about. And then we opened that in 2011.
Yeah, well, I mean, bringing the Taiwanese cuisine and everything I know about, actually, I haven't been to that restaurant, but knowing about it and all the accolades it's gotten, it seems it was a different twist or bringing different cuisine here and flavors that obviously took off. And then how have you incorporated that also into what with opening Makato and the other concepts? Have you kept on that path with like incorporating your culture into your cuisine? And I mean, you have a lot of different concepts going on now. I know.
I think like, you know, like when I, especially if I do interviews like this or even interviews that are just, you know, like quick 5-second interviews, I'll be in a publication and they always ask like, what is your culinary perspective, or what is
your culinary perspective
or your style, right? Yeah. And for a long time, I always really battle. I don't want to be this person that is like the spokesperson for Taiwanese food. Like, I don't want to be the Andy Ricker of Taiwanese food or the Stew Pack of Taiwan. Like, that's not my end game. And especially since we do have a lot of Cambodian food inspired dishes, like I definitely don't want to speak for a culture that's not mine, but my wife's. But I happened to be opening these places in a market where a lot of these things didn't exist before. And I ended up being that spokesperson for these things. And as we kind of slowly evolve, we just really just says like who I am and the people around me. And that cultural and community network, that's what my culinary style is. So I happen to be Taiwanese. My wife happens to be Cambodian. I happen to feel very much a Washingtonian, and that's the food that I cook.
That's all excellent. Yeah, no, I...
I think that's the best I've ever said it.
It's true.
Well, it was, and it was a awesome answer to my question, which was a little bit babbling there too.
So no.
You did a great job. When did Makato open?
So it's these little life events kind of become creative catalysts for me. So one was my grandfather passing away, led to Toki Underground, and then Makato is kind of this love story of me meeting my wife. And going to Cambodia for the first time. And I've always had this very warped sense of what being Asian means or what Asia is. I had never been to Southeast Asia. And then obviously anybody that goes to Southeast Asia, especially I think Vietnam and Cambodia, it really changes the way they see things. And I really fell in love with the people and the culture. And when we got back from the first time going there, basically we got engaged, and I was like, you need to meet my grandparents, my grandmother who's still alive in Taiwan, and then you should meet your family in Cambodia. So we did that trip. When we got back from that, I was like, I have this awesome idea for this concept, and that's where we came up with Makato. What's really great about traveling to Cambodia and Taiwan is all the layover flights, right? So we go to Taipei, you get laid over in Japan, and then you go to Cambodia, you come back, you get laid over in Japan. So we saw all these really amazing spaces that weren't as refined, or maybe more refined too, at the same time as Makato. We have these mixed-use concepts of these larger spaces with young people who can't afford the whole thing on their own, but if they combine all their great ideas, they can come up with these crazy, cool things. So it's not unique. Makato is not unique to a lot of places in the world, but we wanted to bring that spirit back and just do what we do really well. So if we were going to do coffee, it would be excellent. If we were going to be in the retail game, we would do our best at it. And with the food, we would kind of take that new culinary perspective and try to take it to the next level. People had just known me for noodles, so I was like, I kind of wanted to get past that.
Yeah. But you did. I mean, you just touched on it. You have all of those concepts going on under one roof, which is also unique for a restaurant or a little... maybe more so their coffee shops or stores that are putting coffee shops in and restaurants with retail, but it's not super common. But you decided to do, I mean, what's that like running a business that has multiple different concepts all under one name and roof?
I think what made us unique, because there are, like you said, like, you know, in New York there's plenty, in Paris there's plenty, in Tokyo there's a lot of concept like this, but not at the F&B level that we delivered at, right? It's a lot of these like retail stores that were already amazing retail stores that are like, how do we create more traffic or get people? There's a lot of people that visit these stores, but they just want to see it. They don't want to buy any of it. But so how can we get them to spend some money, whether it's a cup of coffee or grilled cheese or ice cream or whatever, right? But not at the level, F&B level that we end up pulling off, which I think was the real challenge, is how do we make the food world take the restaurant seriously? Running it it's basically just, you know, it's like a mini mall. I mean, we open every day at 7 and we close around midnight, and we do breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Or I guess it's like what I do. It's like 3 years of experience before I actually opened the hotel to kind of figure out that kind of operation.
Yeah. Well, my last trip to D.C., I was at, am I saying right? Maketo?
Yeah, it's fine. Maketo.
Maketo.
Yeah.
It's such a cool space with the al fresco dining in the center, and I mean it's very unique, and I like it a lot.
Thank you.
I just need to jump in here and say that Maketo is the reason I accepted the move to DC.
Oh wow!
I was really scared of this city, and then the first tour I got, I think Maketo was the first place I went, and I was like, oh okay.
Yeah, like this is doable. Yeah, this is decent.
This is great.
That's the best endorsement. And on that note, let's take a little break, and we're going to come back and talk more with Eric. We're on Full Service Radio, and this is All in the Industry.
And today's break music by former Heritage Radio engineer and intern Declan, a.k.a. Keto. SoundCloud.com/Keto. We'll be right back on All in the Industry.
Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. From papayas and samosas to reishi mushrooms, if it's something that sounds delicious, chances are you'll find the freshest, best version of it at Whole Foods Market. They have more than 400 stores across the country, so if you consider pizza its own food group, or just can't imagine when avocado toast wasn't a thing, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Visit wholefoodsmarket.com to find a store near you. Whole Foods Market. Whatever makes you whole.
Full Service Radio. Welcome back. This is All in the Industry. Today we're on Full Service Radio out in Washington, D.C. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest is Eric Bruner Yang. He's a D.C.-based chef and owner of Maketo. I'm going to get that right by the end of the show.
That's okay.
There's so many others. Paper Horse, Honeycomb, Brothers and Sisters in Spoken English, which are here. So let's talk about those right now a little
bit.
Awesome. Okay, so we're sitting here in the Line Hotel, which is gorgeous. I'm so happy to be here. And you have, I mean, we're looking at basically Brothers and Sisters, right?
Correct.
So how did this whole project come about? And you want to talk a little about the different concepts of and style cuisine you're doing here?
Yeah, so there's a guy that used to work for Seidel, who's the parent, the company that runs this business, named Tanner Campbell, and he approached me all the way back in 2012. So I've been working on this project for 5 years now. So it's just insane to be involved in something for that long, and then for it to finally happen. But it's this beautiful neoclassical church in the heart of Adams Morgan, and it has this really kind of extravagant front entrance with the church and the steps. So you walk through the church and the steps, and you enter the building. You'll see this little coffee shop called The Cup We All Race For by Spike Girday and his team, and then you'll see on the right. Then you'll see Full Service Radio on the left, and as you kind of walk through this hall, and then you enter really kind of what used to be the center of the church, has been renovated into basically the lobby / one of our restaurant concepts called Brothers and Sisters. So, I mean, definitely morning and breakfast here really feels like an amazing kind of workspace, shared workspace that happens to provide breakfast and lunch. And then dinner here at night, it really turns into this really kind of dark, sexy kind of experience, even though we serve the same food all day. This was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for me to cook really something, to do a menu that was intentionally non-Asian, mm-hmm. because It's the main restaurant for the hotel and its guests. We do room service. We do breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So we're really here, you know, to service the community, but also to serve the 220 rooms that are here. So, you know, Seidel was like, we would really love, because they never really tell you what to do, but they make suggestions. We would really love it if you had kind of a chicken noodle soup. We would really love it if you had a Caesar salad, a burger, something that was just very much for, you know, a traveler that wasn't trying to have a crazy culinary experience. So this was, but you know, I feel like if I opened up a French bistro or a new American restaurant outside of the context of this hotel, people would think it's weird. That's my personal opinion on that.
Well, you can do, I mean, you can do whatever you want to do, but what do you enjoy cooking right now the most?
When I get to cook is the big question, right?
Well, another question is how you manage your time because you have a lot going on.
The type of food we do at Brothers and Sisters is the type of food I like to go eat when I go out to eat because Baqueta or even spoken English and the food that I've been doing, it's just this really kind of crazy, strong, heavy Asian food. And so unlike our mutual friend Pichet, who could eat Chinese food all day, like that's not what I want to do on my time off. So the food here that we did at Brothers and Sisters is the way I like to eat outside of work. So it was kind of like picking and finding food and dishes that I love to eat, getting to put them on a new menu, and then giving it my spin or not spin. Because a lot about Brothers and Sisters is like just trying to keep it as simple as possible, which at the end of the day gives it an Asian aesthetic without it having to be like, I used soy sauce or yuzu or any of these Asian ingredients to make it feel Asian. That was like kind of our end approach to it. But I really enjoyed building this menu. I had to learn a lot of how to make these kinds of dishes because I haven't worked in restaurants like that before that had been doing béarnaise or any of those things. I just don't have that experience. So a lot of this was new for me and I had a great time doing it and working with our chef de cuisine, Harper, who has a very strong French culinary background. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. What about, and you mentioned Pichet. So for listeners, this is Pichet Ong, who's who's doing pastry and cakes at multiple concepts with you, correct? Or
kind of, sort of. I mean, he's mostly, I think he kind of oversees pastries for all of our restaurants, which is really just three that really have a pastry program, Baqueta here and Spoken English. We have a great executive pastry chef at Baqueta named Rebecca Blatzel, who she worked with Pichet for about a year there. Now she kind of runs it and we just kind of taste test and give advice. And he's still here at the hotel, really heavily involved in production and you know him well enough, and I'm sure there's some of your listeners that know him. Like, he's very antsy, so he's constantly changing and creating, and he likes to have that space to be fluid. Is my best way to put it.
Well said. And what about Spoken English?
Spoken English is a restaurant we did here at the Line Hotel. To kind of give some balance, I think Brothers and Sisters, to some people who are fans of my cooking, can be a bit muted. So we wanted to make sure there was, to carve out another space here where they could go and experience what they're used to having from me, which is salty, sour, sweet, spicy, inventive, loud, all of those things that people have expected from our restaurants in the past. But we also, its original intention was to be a tasting menu concept, really, really kind of refined. You're sitting in the kitchen, in very like intimate experience between the chefs and the diners. But that's just not, at the end of the day, as I got older, I was like, that's not the kind of restaurant I always love eating at, which means it would not be the kind of restaurant I would love to be at work at all the time. So kind of evolved. It's a standing restaurant, right?
Right. I was there last night. Yeah. Everything was delicious.
But I think like some people think it's kind of strange. But then once they get there and they kind of unwind a little bit, they realize that they actually do a lot of eating while standing. They may necessarily not want to pay for it, but they're like, oh, this isn't strange. I actually do this a lot when I invite people to my home and we're at our kitchen island and we're just chatting and I've made some food. And how many times does that food actually make it to the dinner table for you to actually sit down and eat? So that was, we've had a lot of people kind of talk about it that way, and that's been kind of nice to see.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it a lot, my first dinner last night.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little about your show that you're doing here on Full Service Radio. So Foreign National, how do you like being a radio host?
I really enjoy it's 1 hour a week, if we can end up doing it consistently every week, because my schedule is nuts. But it's just really nice to have 1 hour a week where I'm doing something with my wife.
Yeah.
And to make that commitment to do an activity together, I like to say activity, but based around our hectic schedule, we kind of just stop everything. We're in this room for 1 hour and we have a guest. So I really like that consistency, to have something like that on my schedule and to see her and for us to do something that is creative. I mean, I'm looking at you and you're so prepared. You have your notes. You sent me like questions before.
I prepare.
But you're like 175 episodes. We're like getting the guest like the day before or 2 hours before, and we're not even really communicating about what we're going to talk about when we get here. But somehow, I think every episode has turned out pretty good.
I've listened to a few, and they have, and you have wonderful chemistry, obviously, with your wife. This is how I'm a preparer. I don't know. That's my style. It's interesting. Some of my guests look at what I send them and some don't, because everyone has their own way of preparing. But when you're talking about starting the show and having the commitment to do the show with Seda, I recently had on Richard Blaze on my show, mm-hmm. and he started a podcast. He's as busy as you are.
I'm always a fan of him.
And he co-hosts it with his wife. And he said the exact same thing you do. It's nice that they have that time together. So that's like, we need one more, and then it's a trend.
Yeah, it's funny. My wife always thinks, she's always like, is Jack going to be mad at us? I swear, like every week she's like, can you ask Jack if he's mad? And I'm like, I don't think he cares. I mean, I think he does care, but we have some leeway, so we should.
This is the debut season of Full Service Radio, and I've always known that season one is going to be people finding their footing.
That's right.
So the answer is no, I'm definitely not mad. no. And you guys have done great shows, I have to be totally honest.
Thanks.
Especially this most recent episode was really, really great.
Yo, next week is going to be really good.
Okay.
That's one I'm actually preparing. That's the only one I'm preparing for.
Who's your guest?
We're going to have Jason Cadell. He's the guitar player for this like famous early 2000s band from Washington, D.C., but also internationally called the Dismemberment Plan. And he's a close friend of mine. And he's like a super foodie. I always run into him at the grocery store. And he's like always making some crazy Italian dish from scratch. But his band basically, they changed kind of the indie rock landscape there for about a decade. And I think it'll be a fun episode. So,
okay. I'll have to tune in. Okay. So before we take another break, I have a question from my last guest mm-hmm. for you. This is on episode 172, Dara Pollack of Skinny Pig NYC, or The Skinny Pig. She's a freelance food writer and social media influencer. So she wants to know, what do you think D.C. does better than New York City? Relating mostly to the food world. She was saying she's been to her last trip. She went to some great speakeasies here. I was thinking maybe speakeasies are a little better here. I don't know. But what's your take?
Oh, man. D.C. does a better job of getting my Uber to my restaurant reservation on time than New York City does.
Okay. That's fair.
Man, I feel like I should answer that better. But, you know, strangely, I don't go out to eat a lot in D.C. So for the listeners, I have two kids. I have a one-year-old. I have a three-year-old. So going out to eat with two kids in any city is really hard, mm-hmm. right? So we have a few places here in Washington, D.C. that we will go out to eat as a family. RPM is definitely one of the ones that we go a lot. We know the chef well there. They always take an amazing care of our kids. And the food is spectacular. So we just go there a lot. Because of my schedule, my wife and I will eat at Old Ebbitt or the Hamilton late a lot. Because it's one of the kind of few decent places that are open after 10 o'clock, where you can get, you still can get raw bar and all that kind of stuff. But like, I can't really compare Old Ebbitt to Blue Ribbon. It's just totally different, right?
Right.
But in New York, because I do travel a lot for work, I do, like you, end up eating, alone a lot and having really nice experiences like that, and everywhere we go. But I don't eat in each city the same way.
Right.
So it's hard for me to totally answer that.
Well, you gave a great answer with...
Uber.
With Uber.
But my favorite restaurant in New York City, which doesn't exist here in Washington, D.C., is Basta Pasta.
Ah.
That's my favorite New York City restaurant.
I'm due to go back there. I haven't been in so many years.
And... Basta Pasta was a huge inspiration for Brothers and Sisters, right? Because to me, Basta Pasta is an Italian restaurant, right? And I think that's what it is to me. But it just happens to be run by Japanese people for the last 20 years. And the aesthetic somehow at the end of the day feels super Asian. But you're still just getting Italian food, right? So that's what we really wanted to kind of get out of that Brothers and Sisters experience. That same feeling I had in Basta Pasta where I was like, okay, I'm an Italian restaurant, but this is Asian, right?
Yeah, okay. So. On that note, let's take a little break. We're going to come back and play my speed round game and talk a little industry news. This is All in the Industry on Full Service Radio. Back. This is All in the Industry on Full Service Radio. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Eric Bruner-Yang. It is time for my speed round game. So, Eric, what this is I'm going to name a couple things and you pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla.
Wait, one more time?
It's an either or question game. So okay. I'm going to say things like chocolate or vanilla and
Got
you
it.
Pick your preference.
Got it.
Okay. You ready?
But I feel like the first question is not going to be that easy.
Well, you could try the trial one, chocolate or vanilla.
Okay. Sherry, yeah, yeah.
I don't think I ever got to play this game in all the times I did your show, so I'm doing it too.
Oh, great. I love it.
All right.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
All right, so let's just have some systems. Jack, you answer first. I'll answer
second. No. You're the guest.
Okay, so I answer first. You answer second.
I'm glad you're organizing this. That's one thing I never do. Miss prepared over here.
Okay, so yeah, let's do the test question.
Okay. Chocolate or vanilla?
Vanilla.
Vanilla also.
I'm chocolate. Okay. Eat in or eat out?
Eat in.
Eat out.
Wine, beer, cocktail, or mocktail?
Diet Coke.
Cocktail.
It's a new one. Tasting menu or a la carte?
Who? Both. Same time.
You want to supplement the tasting
it's
menu?
A new one. I love it. That's a new one. You want them both at the same time.
If they allow it, yeah, because the a la carte's never the same as the tasting menu. It's really annoying.
Okay. Jack?
I just don't like making decisions. I always like having somebody else make the decision. So tasting menu.
There's always like one thing on the... I know this is supposed to be rapid fire, but there's always like one thing on the tasting menu that you would want to swap out that looks better on the a la carte menu.
That's true.
If they give you both. So it's like, can I just buy both?
It's like... that's an answer from a chef, for sure. It's great. How about Small plates or large plates?
Small.
Yeah, small.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Chef's counter.
Yeah, chef's counter, unless I'm with people I want to be at a communal table with.
Okay. Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
Either's fine.
Yeah,
politically,
same.
Politically correct there, I guess.
Up, to the, like, up to the restaurant.
Well, Jack, I don't know how you're going to answer this one. Cooking on the line or expediting?
Expo.
Yeah, I got nothing.
And I had ramen or udon or any other noodle.
Udon.
Udon, really?
Yeah, it's my favorite.
I thought you were going to go with ramen.
I hate it.
Ew. Do you hate it just because you've done it so much?
I just can't do it. It has to be like super clean, light. If I go to a ramen shop, typically I'll just order broth noodles and scallions. I try to ask for like no toppings.
Wow.
I just want to experience like the two main things and like that's it. Because like a lot of, I mean, Tokyo is definitely a perpetuator of this problem, but like ramen toppings are just like so crazy now. It's like I just kind of want the soup and the noodles.
Okay.
That's what I love about udon. It's just clean.
Clean.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoy clean ramen as well, and also don't love the trend towards throwing everything in a bowl. But ramen's still my answer over udon.
Okay. Two more. Cheese plate or dessert?
Dessert.
If it's piché, it's dessert.
Yeah.
Give him a little plug. That's good. How about Manhattan, Brooklyn, or D.C.?
D.C. For sure, D.C.
D.C.
Fantastic.
I would never want to live in New York City.
Never? Not even to try it?
Not even to try it.
Maybe if you were in your early 20s.
If I was independently wealthy and I didn't have to work, I would love to live in New York City, but I would never want to do the New York City grind.
It's a grind. I've been there now coming up on 20 years.
I mean, I did the 2 weeks at Chantang and I wanted to die. That was awful. Commuting from Bushwick to Hell's Kitchen was like the worst experience of my life.
That's so funny. That's why I laugh when people... I live about 25 minutes away from the hotel, and people are like, you commute? That's crazy. 25 minutes each way? And I'm like, you have never lived
you've
in
never
New
done,
York?
You've never done Bushwick to Hell's Kitchen.
This is just what you get used to. Well, I go out to Bushwick once a week for my show, but I work independently home office, so I don't have a commute otherwise. So... But
yeah, like if I had like, you know, like if I had like a trust fund and a nice rent-controlled apartment, and maybe I bartended at Blue Ribbon once a week for fun because they make crazy money there. That sounds nice.
That sounds like a great New York life.
Yeah, that sounds like a great New York City life.
Okay, well, two out of three. Well, I don't know. Two people here in pro DC, and it's pretty lovely. I don't know. Maybe I should give DC
a
shot.
It's slow living and fast living at the same time.
I agree.
Yeah.
And it's cherry blossom season, which I'm going to go see later.
Our streets are much cleaner.
Okay. And the Uber, I mean, we got to say, the Uber's faster.
Well, Uber's not amazing here, but compared to New York, it's better. But...
Oh, it's amazing here. Yeah, as a New Yorker.
Okay, so let's talk some industry news. There was on Eater.com an article how author Julia Tershin launches database for marginalized voices in food. It's called Equity at the Table, and it's her response to gender and racial discrimination. And this article was by Amanda Clute. So Julia Tershin, who's this amazing writer, she writes for New York Times and other publications, she started this database, and basically now people, women in the industry, of people of color, queer women, gender nonconforming individuals can sign up and be a part of this, basically just trying to make a resource out there, as a lot of the press and a lot of the conferences and a lot of the things that happen in our industry, people are noticing don't have that much diversity. It's basically my take on it. So,
okay.
Any comments on this or?
So the take on the article is restaurants lack diversity.
Well, that's my take on it. This is, yeah, it's, she started this as a, I mean, she's calling out that really a lot of the food shows and the conferences and everything are dominated by white men.
I mean,
that's a part of the article.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
And so having a database that has just, you can find people in the industry who are bakers and authors and chefs and cooks and of different backgrounds, that there maybe it would help get more exposure to different walks of life.
And I think she's just trying to give a practical thing for people to do when they say things like, I want to be more diverse, I want to interview these people. So it's like, all right.
A solution.
Yeah, exactly.
Solutions are the best.
Yes.
And her wife, Grace, both who used to do shows on Heritage Radio, Grace Bonney also put out this really nice template of an email because she speaks on a lot of panels. Eric, I know you can probably relate to this too. And she basically gave people a draft of a response to say, hey, thanks for considering me. Who else is on this panel? What kind of voices are you including? Are there people of color that could take my spot? Like, do you really need me?
I love that.
Yeah, both of them are really doing good stuff.
I think for sure, and when you get into the food and wine events, all of those, it's definitely very, that's the way it is. My experience is a little different because I do a lot of ones that are Asian centered. So maybe it's not diverse. Maybe it's mostly all Asian males. But that's kind of what my kind of main experience. Only have I on the national scene broken into a few of those, like Aspen Food and Wine, here and there over the last 10 years. And that's definitely the experience that I've done a lot of panels here in Washington, D.C., and I think that what's really just been, happening over the last few years, at least, is that there is a level of self-awareness about this happening, in the sense that people are being a little bit more cognizant about when they kind of set these things up and how they're going to do them. But Washington, D.C. itself is a pretty diverse city in general. So I feel like when we have these kind of like more localized events, it's not the same. The issue that we have here specifically in DC, because I can just speak to my experience, is that the panels or these things that do happen are a little bit watered down, in the sense that it's the same 20 of us at every single one, mm-hmm. where the experience is not really transcending. It's just like one after the other one. Happens to me a lot. I'm super happy to do it. It's a great way for me to promote the restaurants, and it's something that's just needed to do. And we have a mutual friend named Desiree, and I don't want to put her thing out there, but I feel like sometimes she has that, like, why am I being asked to do this? Is it because you're trying to make your diversity landscape, or are you actually really interested in my story? And there's a lot of that kind of stuff happening, but I think at least like these stories are being told. So it's a kind of a tough balance. I'm happy to say like the James Beard finalists, it seems a lot more diverse than it's ever been.
Yeah,
for sure. And I think, but also just through time, there's just like some of these guys, they've been in the industry for 20 to 30, 40 years. And that's just how it was. That's just how it was. And they have... A lot of them were really influential in creating a lot of these events. So, of course, it's just going to be dominated by the people that are surrounded by them. But as they get older and they hire younger and they change their corporate structures, that's really when you see these things kind of evolve and the events evolve.
Yeah, one quick thing, too. For New York listeners, because I know, Shari, you have a lot of New York listeners, D.C. is a really diverse place. That's like the first thing I noticed about this city. And I think maybe if New York City looked outside of itself every once in a while, it could solve some of its diversity problems.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think, like, having, our restaurants are, we have a lot of Latin Americans, we have a lot of African Americans, we have a lot of binary, we have a lot of Asian Americans, white Americans, non-Americans. But I think that just really speaks to the DC landscape. I think as an owner, an entrepreneur, you do need to give everyone an equal chance when you do the interviews. And ours is really like, our motto is always like, just hire nice people, right? Just hire nice people. And we can train, hopefully, if they have the patience, we can train them to learn anything. And so that's always what we've been. Doesn't mean it's easy. Doesn't mean we're always short cooks either, like everyone else. But I think that's just our approach. Like, are you super nice? Would I take you to my mom's house? And if we can kind of check those two boxes, then, you know, I think everyone can be employable.
I like that. I think that's a great way to hire.
Yeah.
And I've also noticed, I mean, beyond New York, just having gone to a lot of conferences around the country and also just reading articles in different publications, that a lot of times it's the same chefs or the same people are being quoted or on panels. And so I think I would like to see more diversity in everything too. And there's been a more push for having more women involved and spoken about, and not just the token few that get quoted a lot in articles. So I think this is really great what she's doing.
Yeah, actually, I think as I like the way it was explained about, hey, how about don't ask me, why don't you ask someone else? And like, well, I've done that before with when people ask me food about Cambodian questions mm-hmm. about Cambodian food. I'm like, I'm happy to answer these questions, but you should really check out this girl in Brooklyn. She has this pop-up called Krung. She's actually Khmer, and like, you should really ask her, because she like can say the words right. She knows, like, it's like really mm-hmm. deep rooted in her.
That's great.
And like, so I actually kind of like that, maybe like using that more, like, I would love to do your panel, but you should invite this other person instead.
Right. Check out the database. I mean, and it's also, she has, it's the letters are EATT of Equity at the Table. So she's tying it right into the food world.
Cool.
Okay. So we're going to take one more break, and then we're going to come back, do my solo dining experience, and have the final question. This is All in the Industry on Full Service Radio.
Again, all the music you've been hearing here on The Breaks is by Kido, K-I-E-D-O, on SoundCloud. Also a former Heritage Radio intern and engineer, Declan. The theme song on this program is by the California Honey Drops. And we will be right back on All in the Industry.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Full Service Radio. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. It's time for my solo dining experience. So this week, it's at Pineapple and Pearls. Here's the rundown. The location, 715 8th Street, Southeast, Washington, D.C. The concept, inventive American tasting menu, elegant yet playful. The chef, Aaron Silverman. So why did I go? Because this restaurant has been on the best DC best restaurant list for a long time. It received 4 stars from critic Tom Sietsema at the Washington Post and just a lot of rave reviews. And I'm out here. So I actually went last night. And my experience, I booked my reservation about a month ago online, and I got a reservation for 1 at the 8:30 p.m. seating at the bar. They also offer seating in the main dining room at the chef's counter as well. Those are priced a little higher because you have to do the beverage pairing if you sit in those spots. So at the bar, I had the option not to do a beverage pairing, which is what I went with. I arrived. I was immediately greeted. They were extremely warm and friendly. They gave me a warm towel for my hands and a complimentary little mocktail. And I was seated at the bar and dinner began. So what did I get? It was an 11-course tasting menu, and each dish was presented by different chefs and servers who not only explained every dish, but there was a very interactive part of plating the dishes and very delicate cutting of fish and courses, and it was fun for a very elegant experience. Some of the dishes included foie gras nigiri, silken tofu with Hokkaido uni, bone-in turbo, which was carved tableside, pierogi duplex, and some veal sweetbread and croûte. A dessert, there was a fennel sorbet and a light and very pretty carrot cake. So my take, I really enjoyed everything. It was very meticulous techniques, original presentations, very beautiful, and the staff was lovely and very knowledgeable about what they were doing. The ambiance. So I was in the intimate front room bar area, and then in the back there's a main dining room that has an open kitchen. The space is modern yet minimalistic. Perfect for food lovers who enjoy unique and interactive experiences. Interesting tidbit. The restaurant name refers to pineapple as a symbol of hospitality and pearls as a symbol of elegance. Personal fun fact, last time I was in D.C. in October 2016, I went to Pineapple and Pearls Bakery, which is at the same location, and I had had their pineapple roll and a fried chicken roll. Both were delicious. The cost was $225. That's all inclusive. The way it worked was I paid for half of it when I made the reservation, half of it the day of the reservation. So it's an interesting dining paying method, but I guess it works.
They use talk? Is that what?
No. I think they're on their own system. I have to double check, but I've used talk a lot. Yeah, I think it wasn't talk.
Cool.
Okay, so would I go back? Yes, if you're paying. And the website is pineappleandpearls.com.
You make Piché pay next time.
Yeah.
Aaron does an amazing job of making food super approachable, but very much high level, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's I could have summed it up like that.
Yeah,
it was. And the staff, when you know you're talking about hiring nice people, I feel like they have to have that in there in what they're looking for with the staff they're hiring, because everyone was just so nice. And then I started thinking back about my experiences in New York. I'm like, well, we're nice, but I feel like they're a little nicer here.
Well, I think sometimes D.C. sometimes gets, I think it's strange, but we are categorized as a southern state. This is the South.
Yeah,
South
of really,
the Mason-Dixon, right?
Yeah, I don't think I ever think of that.
Yeah, so. Apparently we're southerners.
Okay, southerners, southern hospitality. So it was great. Okay, time for the final question. My next guest is Drew Nieporant, who doesn't really need an introduction, but I'll give him one. He's one of America's most respected and celebrated restaurateurs. He's the founder and owner of Myriad Restaurant Group. That includes Tribeca Grill, Nobu NYC, a bunch of the Nobus, Batard. He's got a lot going on. Another busy man. Eric, what would you like to ask Drew?
Was that on the prepared?
That was on the list.
Man, that's one I should have totally prepared for.
Well, you can ask him anything.
Okay. If he had the opportunity to reopen Corton, would he do it?
Okay.
That's my question.
I will find
as it was that first year. If he could reopen that first year experience
with everything, with Paul, with the whole way.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the same size, like not a bigger version of it. The stars aligned, or maybe not. Maybe it's not an alignment of stars. I don't know. I don't know the back. I mean, I saw the documentary.
Mm-hmm.
You can give him this context.
I saw the documentary,
and it was an amazing documentary. And the interaction of those two, those scenes, was just like, that was just really great filmmaking. So, would he
do it? I will find out. You have to tune in.
Is that kind of a basic question to ask him? I don't know.
No, any question. I mean, it's not a basic question. Okay, I wasn't expecting you to
okay, my
to
second
say
sandwich,
that.
Second question
sandwich.
Would be, if it's a chicken club sandwich, would he prefer it fried chicken or grilled chicken or deli chicken?
Never. That's an original too.
That's what I got.
Okay. That's the show. Thank you.
Hey, thank you so much. What a huge honor. I'm really, you could have interviewed anybody in DC when you came, and I'm glad you did me.
Are you kidding me? I had to interview you. We're at the Line Hotel. This has been, I don't want to leave. I mean, this is so, This is so amazing and a huge honor for me to be here, to be interviewing you, to be here with fabulous Jack Inslee producing the show over there. And thank you, Jack, and thank you, Line Hotel, and thank you, Eric.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Our pleasure.
So much fun.
People, everyone, you know, listeners, this is quite the spot. And check out my show. Will also be on Heritage Radio next week. I'm going to re-air it on Wednesday, April 11th at my usual 4 p.m. time slot. So I'm now both. I got Heritage Radio Network and Full Service Radio. As a recap, my guest today has been Eric Bruner Yang. He's D.C.-based chef and owner of multiple restaurants in D.C. And you can definitely come here to the Line Hotel. Check them out. Brothers and Sisters, Spoken English. They're fabulous. And Jack Inslee, founder of Full Service Radio, is here at the Line Hotel. Stop in and say hi to Jack. He's awesome. Okay, websites. I'm doing this whole thing. The Line Hotel /Full Service Radio.
Oh, fullserviceradio.org, actually.
Oh.
Get you right there.
Fantastic. Even better. Social media. You got Eric Bruner Yang, Full Service Radio, Line Hotel, Jack Inslee, Pichet Ong, Sherry Bayer, Bayer PR, All Industry. Those are always at all those. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. My website's BayerPublicRelations.com, SherryBayer.com. And let's wrap this up. Thank you again. Thank you, Line Hotel. Thank you, Full Service Radio. I'm Sherry Bayer. You've been listening to All in the Industry, and thank you for being part of it. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.